yours to do.
Don't be foolish.
I'll get a second opinion, she said again. I'll go to the courthouse and ask.
Miss Wetherill, Devlin said, calm yourself. Think, it would be the word of a minister against the word of a whore.
I'm not whoring any more.
A former whore, said Devlin. Forgive me.
He took a step towards her, and Anna retreated. Her hand was still pressed flat over her breast.
If you come one step closer, she said, I'll scream and I'll rip my bodice open and say you did it. They'll hear me from the street. They'll rush in.
Devlin had never before been threatened in this way.
I will come no closer, he said with dignity. I will retreat, in fact, and at once.
He returned to the chair he had formerly occupied and sat down.
I do not wish to brawl with you, he said, speaking quietly now. I do wish to ask you several questions, however.
Go on, said Anna, still breathing hard. Ask!
Devlin decided upon a direct approach. Did you know that the gowns you purchased salvaged last winter had once belonged to Lydia Wells? Anna gaped at him.
Kindly answer the question, Devlin said. I am referring to the 5 gowns which Mrs. Wells used to blackmail Mr. Alistair Lauderback with Francis Carver's help.
What? She said.
The gowns, Devlin went on, which each contained a small fortune in pure ore, stitched into the lining around the bodice and around the hem. One of these dresses was made of orange silk, the other 4 were muslin, and coloured cream, grey, pale blue, and striped pink. These 4 are currently stowed in a box beneath the stairs at the Gridiron Hotel. The orange gown is in the possession of Mr. Aubert Gascoigne at his private residence.
He had her full attention now.
Oh, do you know this? She whispered.
I have made it my business to find out a good deal about you, said Devlin. Now answer the question.
Her face was pale.
Only the orange gown had gold, she said. The other 4 had makeweights, made of lead.
Did you know that they had once belonged to Lydia Wells?
No, Anna said. Not for sure.
But you suspected it.
I'd heard something, she said, months ago.
When did you first discover what the gowns contained?
The night after Emery disappeared.
After you were jailed for attempted suicide?
Yes.
And Mr. Gascoigne paid your bail on promise, and together you took apart the orange gown at his cottage on Revel Street and hid the tatters under his bed thereafter.
How?
She whispered. She looked terrified. Devlin did not pause.
Presumably, after you returned to the Gridiron that evening, your first move was to go back to your wardrobe and check the 4 remaining gowns.
Yes, said Anna, but I didn't cut them open. I only felt along the seams. I didn't know that it was lead that I was feeling. I thought it was more colour.
In that case, Devlin said, you must have believed that you were suddenly extraordinarily rich.
Yes.
But you did not open the hems of those dresses in order to use that gold to repay your debt to Edgar Clinch.
Later I did, said Anna. The following week. That's when I found the makeweights.
But even then, Devlin said, you did not tell Mr. Gascoigne what you surmised. Instead, you pretended helplessness and ignorance, claimed to have no money, and begged him for aid.
How do you know all this? Anna said.
I will ask the questions, thank you, Devlin said. Why did you not strip the other 4 gowns immediately?
I wanted to keep it back, Anna said, as a nest egg, and I didn't have anywhere to hide the metal. I thought I might ask Emery about it. There was no one else I trusted, but by then he was gone.
What about Lydia Wells? Devlin said. What about Lydia Wells, who came to the Gridiron that same afternoon, who paid your debt to Mr. Clinch, and who has shown you every kind of hospitality ever since?
No.
Anna's voice had become very small.
You never told her about those gowns?
No.
Because you suspected they had once belonged to her.
I'd heard something, Anna said. I never knew, not for certain. but I knew that there was something, and she was desirous to get them back.
Devlin folded his arms. Anna was plainly fearful of how much he knew about her situation, and how he had come to know it. This pained him, but he reflected that, given the circumstances, it was better to keep her frightened than to risk her becoming bold. It would not do to have her flapping that forged signature about.
"Where is Mr. Stearns?" he said next.
"I don't know."
"I think you do."
"No,"
she said. "I shall remind you that you have committed serious fraud by forging a signature in a dead man's hand."
"He's not dead."
Devlin nodded. He had been hoping for a definite answer.
"How do you know that?"
Anna did not reply, so Devlin said again, more sharply, "How do you know that, Miss Wetherill?"
"I've been getting messages,"
Anna said at last.
"From Mr. Stearns?"
"Yes."
"What kind of messages?"
"They're private."
"How does he communicate them?"
"Not with words," said Anna.
"How then?"
"I just feel him."
"You feel him?"
"Inside my head."
Devlin exhaled.
"I suppose you doubt my word now,"
Anna said.
"I most certainly do," Devlin said. "It goes rather hand in hand with your being a fraudster, I'm afraid."
Anna thumped a hand over the paper hidden in her breast.
"You held on to this for a mighty long time," she said.
Devlin glared at her. He opened his mouth to make a retort, but before he could find the words, he heard brisk steps upon the porch, and the rattle of the door handle, and the sudden noise of the street, as the front door swung inwards and someone walked in. Anna looked at Devlin with frightened eyes. The widow had returned from the courthouse, and she was calling Anna's name. Saturn in Virgo, in which George Shepherd does not appoint a deputy, Kui Long is mistaken for another man, and Dick Mannering draws the line. George Shepherd had spent the morning of the 20th of March supervising various deliveries of materials and hardware to the site of the future jailhouse at Sea View, which, 2 months into the project of its construction, was looking more and more imposing every day. The walls had gone up, the chimneys had been bricked, and inside the main residence the fortified doors had all been fitted and hung in their steel frames. There were still many details to be ironed out, of course. The lamps had yet to be delivered. The jailhouse kitchen still lacked a stove. There was still no glass in the jailer's cottage windows. The pit beneath the gallows had not yet been dug. But all in all, everything had moved splendidly quickly.